December 7th, 1941. December 8th in Japan. Early AM before dawn. The Pacific Ocean. 275 miles northwest of Oahu. In the black of night, the Kido Butai smashed through the heavy seas at full speed. The carrier battle group was the world's newest and most powerful naval fleet. Six carriers tightly packed with 414 attack aircraft, two battleships, 20 escort ships, and 23 submarines. The massive Akagi, equipped with two levels of hangars, housing 91 planes, was the largest aircraft carrier the Imperial Japanese Navy had ever built, and was the flagship of the 1st Air Fleet under the command of Vice Admiral Chuichi Nagumo, a meticulous planner, cautious to a fault. Salt mist and the smell of aviation fuel hung in the air of the hangars, as engineers in white jumpsuits feverishly unlashed aircraft from their moorings on the floor, unchucked the wheels of fighters and bombers, and began transferring planes to elevators, to be raised to the dock flight deck. A steel hull gave a haunting screech as it twisted from the pounding waves. Engineers fastened 18-foot torpedoes and 1,760-pound armor-piercing bombs to the bellies of Nakajima B-5Ns, fit Aichi D-3A dive bombers with 550-pound bombs, and fed thousands of rounds of ammunition to Zero fighters. In an organized frenzy, men coaxed aircraft into position onto waiting elevators. Planes began to fill the wind-blown deck, each engine coughing clouds of smoke and snorting blue flames from the exhaust pipes, rumbling to join the deafening thunder of a storm about to break. At the front of the low-ceiling briefing room, crammed with men anxious for a fight, stood the senior flight commander of the 1st Air Fleet, 1st Carrier Division, the pilot who would lead the historic attack, Commander Mitsuo Fuchida. Facing his eager airmen seated upright and standing before gray walls, Fuchida stood proudly, his hands behind his back in his dark brown jumpsuit, trimmed with a fur collar, and overlaid with a brown kapok-filled float vest. He had a narrow, dense mustache. A blackboard behind him displayed flight paths to islands, last-minute details, and exhortations of, "As the gods have given us victory in the past, so will they give us victory in the future!" And, "Win or lose, you will fight and die for your country!" Having anticipated this day for months, today his joy mixed with the fire in his eyes and the adrenaline in his veins. "In the event we fail to destroy the aircraft on the ground," Fuchida announced, "or we lose the element of surprise, I will give the signal for the dive bombers to begin the attack. Otherwise, the torpedo bombers will initiate as planned." He scanned the faces of his torpedo pilots who nodded. He had longed and dreamed of this day of vindication before the eyes of the world. Off to his side stood his fleet commander, the rather stocky Vice Admiral Nagumo, and beside him, Fuchida's longtime best friend and chief planner of the impending attack, Lieutenant Minoru Genda, in his officer's uniform, strikingly handsome. As the idling planes rumbled outside the door, and the ship rose and fell in the turbulent sea, Fuchida sensed a powerful mixture of fatherly pride and deep compassion for the 146 young airmen before him, men he knew by name, men he had personally trained, all of them impatient, restless, serious, some whose mothers would weep when the day was over. Under any other circumstances, he would have forbidden his flyers from taking off in such stormy seas, but such was their destiny. "Years of training and careful planning have brought us to this moment in time." He paused to let his eyes penetrate the hearts of his flyers, then snatched his soft leather flight helmet from the table, pulled it over his head, and adjusted the goggles above his forehead. "Our duty is not only to protect the untarnished past of our ancestors, but to annihilate the enemies of Japan and to establish a new order for the future. The Imperial Way!" Passion energized his body as he paced like a tiger, eyeing an opening cage door. "This is our day! Today, our opportunity to mark our place in history! The world will soon know that we are the new samurai! The Empire's fate depends on the result of this battle! Let every man do his utmost!" He snapped to attention and threw both arms to the sky as the men leapt to their feet, then led his warriors into a resounding cheer. "Tenno Heika! Banzai! Banzai! Banzai!" To the east, the edge of the dark blue morning sky glowed orange along the ocean horizon. Engineers sprinted between aircraft on the wind-blown deck, while pilots and flight crews clambered into their idling planes. Shuffling through a crowded passageway, Fuchida stared distantly at the floor, as he fastened his chin strap and scoured his mind for any details he may have overlooked. Glancing up, Genda's face woke him from his thoughts. Airmen eased past them toward the angry chorus of attack planes. Fuchida lowered his hands and gazed deeply into Genda's eyes. This was it. There was no turning back.
December 7th, 3 hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor. McCord Field, Tacoma, Washington. Jake's mother, Hulda, stood in the kitchen in her apron, smudges of flour on her face and hands, clenching the phone with both hands. She winced as her husband, Hiram, watched and listened with his arms folded. "Now, son, we're all upset about this, but you mustn't. They just murdered a bunch of Americans in cold blood." Hulda glanced over to her husband. She spoke gently but firmly. "Well, son, you know I'm all right with war. After all, David killed Goliath, but you should never pay back evil with evil, but to do good to—" "Don't tell me, Ma. Let's see, God tells us to forgive our enemies, but he burns all his up? Do I have it right, Ma? Well, do I?" "Son, as far as I'm concerned, I'd be happy if we wiped every last Jap off the face of the earth. They want to fight? Well, now they got one." Jake slammed the phone down, struggled to push the folding glass door open, and squeezed out as another fuming soldier headed in.
August 1942, Cuca College, New York. Peggy plopped down beside Jean and began watching the cartoon parody entitled The Ducktators, featuring ducks as ridiculous caricatures of Hitler and Mussolini, with Tojo as a buck-toothed dopey duck speaking Japanese gibberish. Scattered chuckles in the audience didn't surprise Peggy. Asians in upstate New York were a rare sight, and anti-Japanese sentiment ran high in America. After an allied turtle repeatedly whomped the cartoon Jap duck with a mallet, a hefty man behind Peggy grunted to a friend, "Damn Japs. Like Halsey says, the only good Jap is a dead Jap." His buddy replied, "Old man Halsey says that one day Japanese will only be spoken in hell, hee hee." Peggy excused herself, walked up the carpet in the darkened theater, pushed out through a glass doorway, and drifted in thought down the sidewalk. With her arms folded across her chest, pulling her coat tightly to keep out the chill she still felt from inside the theater, she shuddered at the thought of the cruelty of mankind. Weren't we all the same inside? And how was this war going to end? She remembered her childhood friends in Japan and wondered how they were. Why did people want to kill each other so badly? Glancing up at the bright crescent moon, she whispered aloud, "Dear God, what's wrong with this world?"